This is implausible engineering. Let's get some propulsion. Given the surprises that science and technology have brought us, you never want to say that anything is impossible, although here at Cheap Astronomy, we are supremely confident that travelling or communicating faster than light is impossible. Since space and time are just two aspects of the same thing, you simply can't cross space without crossing some amount of time. So your only options are space-time cheats, where you either duck out into hyperspace and back again, or you somehow warp space-time so that somewhere far away is made a lot closer. But all that said, neither of those cheats look like plausible engineering at this point in history. So for the next few hundreds of years, it's best just to put all that to one side and consider what might be achievable with conventional propulsion engines. Although when we say conventional, we're still going to deal with some unconventional ways of achieving propulsion. Chemical rocketry has got us off Earth and to the Moon and to the planets, as has solar-powered electric propulsion, that is, ion drives, for lightweight robotic spacecraft. We've also done some experimental things with solar sails, but it's not likely that astronauts will be solar sailing anytime soon. The next step beyond chemical rocketry is nuclear, as in nuclear fission, and possibly maybe nuclear fusion, assuming we can ever get that to work. Nuclear fission drives are pretty much within our technological grasp. We just have to build them now. Here at Cheap Astronomy, we're a big fan of the Orion drive, which worked by dropping atom bombs out the back of a spacecraft to drive it forward. But current thinking is towards fission drives that work more like standard nuclear reactors, using the reactor core as a heat source, which then expands a gaseous propellant, which is then pushed out the rocket exhaust nozzle to drive the spacecraft forward. Whenever we do send astronauts to Mars, a nuclear thermal propulsion drive seems the likely option. It should be a bit faster than chemical propulsion engines, and that bit of extra speed will be important to maximise astronaut survival over the expected years-long mission. After that, we move into hypothetical territory. The first step in building a nuclear fusion drive is to get nuclear fusion to work at all. The incremental improvements we've managed so far are moving in the right direction, but we may only really know if we can get there when we do actually get there. Once we have a proper engineering solution for a fusion reactor, the next step is to work that solution into a spacecraft engine. For the record, we could launch a nuclear fusion-driven spacecraft now, just by following the Orion model of dropping hydrogen bombs out the back of the spacecraft. Hydrogen bombs work by using a standard nuclear fission bomb, that is, an atom bomb, to trigger fusion reactions within its hydrogen fuel, or sometimes lithium fuel. This works because the fission blast compresses and heats the fusion fuel to temperatures of around 100 million degrees Celsius, equivalent to temperatures generated in the core of the Sun, which are hence sufficient to generate fusion. To date, we haven't been able to generate these sort of conditions within a fusion reactor without destroying the reactor. What we are trying to do in current prototype fusion reactors is to generate those conditions on a really small scale through magnetic containment or a very narrow concentration of lasers, but we are yet to generate a level of fusion energy that exceeds the amount of energy we put in to make that fusion reaction happen. An antimatter drive is even trickier. It could, theoretically, generate far more energy than a fusion engine, since when an antimatter particle comes into contact with a matter particle, both particles annihilate in a burst of gamma rays in accordance with E equals mc squared, meaning that from a tiny amount of mass, you get an absolute load of energy. But at least three engineering problems arise from the fact that gamma rays are very difficult to contain. While gamma rays do carry a lot of energy, and hence a lot of heat, if you try to use gamma rays to run a standard heat engine, those gamma rays may just vaporize the engine. The second problem is that all those gamma rays do generate a lot of heat in your spacecraft, which is then difficult to lose in the vacuum of space, since all you can rely on to cool the ship is slow radiative loss. And thirdly, of course, the gamma rays could kill your astronauts if the crew compartment isn't adequately shielded. But putting all that to one side, it remains to be seen if you can even run an antimatter drive to create such energies. Antimatter does exist in nature, but generally not for very long, since it will zap into gamma rays as soon as it comes into contact with an equivalent component of matter. So firstly, it's hard to capture antimatter in large quantities, and secondly, it's hard to store it, since if you put antimatter in a storage tank composed of matter, it will just go kablooey. Current thinking is that we might store charged antimatter particles, like antiprotons, in some kind of magnetic trap, and perhaps we can collect enough antiprotons to power a spaceship by running a series of purpose-built particle accelerators. Perhaps we could even put a particle accelerator on board a spacecraft. After all, that has about the same level of engineering plausibility as anything else we've said so far. So none of this is impossible, it's just several steps beyond what we can do right now. An antimatter drive may be our best bet to get up to speeds that are significant proportions of the speed of light, but at those sort of speeds, you have collisions with dust grains to contend with. It's estimated that at 20% of the speed of light, an aluminium spacecraft hull would erode by about 1 centimetre over 30 years, over which period you would cross a distance of 6 light years. That means that with a thick enough hull, you might make it to the nearest star system, Proxima Centauri, and make it back to Earth within your lifetime, but that would be pretty much your lifetime done. So, even if we do ever manage to build an antimatter drive, as we often say here at Cheap Astronomy, why not just send the robot?